We are on Lamed Ches Amud Aleph. We had just gone through a few different examples of psukim that aren't read the same way that they're written, or they're not necessarily written at all, according to what the Gemara said. But we are up to the next part. Amar Rav Acha Bar Ada. Oh no, we did that one.
Yeah, we're in Amar
Rav. Where he splits the pasuk in Shmos Yud Tes, he says that in Eretz Yisrael they split it in three. Now we're up to the next one. Amar Rav Chama Rav Chanina. Lo Hesher Moshe Elamim Psoltan. Shel Haluchos. Moshe Rabbeinu apparently got rich off of the leftovers from the first luchos that broke. Is that what it means?
He says from the parts that was.
Oh, from the extras carved. That he used when he carved. Okay, so we know that the first luchos, when they were broken, they were pounded into a flour and into a dust and then given to the people, right? So that's not talking about that. It's talking about when he carved the luchos, and I guess you see like when he chiseled out the letters, so that dust that came off, he used that to his own to enrich himself. Shenam or Psal Lacha, Shnei Lachos Avinim Karish, in the second ones at least, Sultan Shal Chayehe, that you shall chisel out the Luchos, the second ones, just like the first ones, but now they're yours, Lacha, and that's why you can keep it. Amar Rav Yosef Rav Chanin Elo Nitzatara El, what does that mean? I have no idea. I think they say that maybe the Luchos were made of marble, is that true? Or sapphire? We're talking about. You know what I'm talking about?
Sapphire.
Yeah, there's some kind of gem, so maybe they were a little precious. I don't know. Amar Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, Lo Nitna Torah, Ala Lemoshe Ulezaro. Okay. Shnei Raksav Lecha, Psal Lecha, Mapsal Tan Shalcha, Ach Savan Lecha. Just like the extras are for you, so too the actual words are for you. What is the practical ramification of that phrase? They're only for Moshe and his children?
Does that mean that just like we say that it's usher for a goy to keep Shabbos?
I was thinking that also, but the Maharsha apparently talks about how the institution of teaching Torah was given only to Moshe Rabbeinu and his kids. That's the Maharsha. Okay. Let's keep going. It's going to be like that a little bit. Moshe Nagba Tovas Ayin. When the son of Israel. Then Moshe Rabbeinu thought that even though it was given to me and my kids, I'm going to give it to everybody else too. Elokas of Omer, Tov Ayin Hu Yivorach. Interesting pasuk. Talked about that before. Pasuk in Mishlei, I think.
Oh. I think the first part was saying when he says, he makes the comparison of write for yourself and
right.
Carve for yourself. It means God said to Moshe Rabbeinu, these luchos are yours, not for everybody else. And Moshe was generous and gave it to
Klal. Right. Well, that's what the Gemara.
He didn't have to give it over to Klal.
Right. The continuation of the Gemara is that he gave it over to Klal. But what does he give over? Right, so the Maharsha points out that it can't be that he gave over the Torah and mitzvos, because Torah and mitzvos are for everybody, but rather the institution of teaching the Torah. That's what the Maharsha says. But yeah, so originally only Moshe Rabbeinu was supposed to be the teacher, and it was supposed to be a patrilineal descent of teachers. In just like Kohanim, there would be Moras or Rebbes that would only come from Moshe's line, which obviously we can't understand what that means, because we don't have that, because Moshe Rabbeinu gave it to everybody else.
That's true, man.
Yeah.
So I guess then all the teachers would be Levium.
Right. Yeah. Meisav Rav Chista, Va'osi Tziva Hashem Beis Tahil Lamed Eschem. Va'osi Tziva Va'ani Lachem. Oh, so that's a question. The first part was a question. Meisav Rav Chista, Va'osi Tziva Hashem Beis Tahil Lamed Eschem. Moshe Rabbeinu was giving it to everybody else.
He was commanded to give it to him.
Right. So what do you mean if he took it for himself and then voluntarily gave it to everybody else? No, vosi tziva v'ani lachem. Okay. I don't see that in the pasuk, but that's how he's understanding it. Tiva v'ani lechem. Again, same type of thing. V'ata kitzu lechem as hashira azos. Hashira lechuda. Only Hazinu had a specific instruction to give to everybody else. But the rest of the Torah was just for Moshe Rabbeinu. That only makes sense according to the opinion that that's referring to only Hazinu. Okay, fine. You can't say that prophet's talking about only, oh, there you go, Hazinu, because it says that the song should be a testimony for all the Jewish people. But that's referring to the mitzvot, not just to Hazinu. Ella, Pilpula Ba'alma. Rather, oh, so maybe the Marashah would refer to the end of the Gemara, which is that we're talking about teaching Torah or learning Torah. Maybe I got it wrong. Yeah, learning Torah like in depth. That's what it was. The Marashah thinks that this entire Gemara was, the conclusion of this Gemara is that only Moshe Rabbeinu and his children were the Kola guys. Everybody else had the Torah, they had to know what it said, like a woman has to know what to do. So you have to learn the Torah for the practical purposes. But only Moshe Rabbeinu and his children were going to be the ones to sit in Kolel and really delve into it and understand all the ins and outs. I don't know where Daf Yomi falls on that continuum, but it's a moot point anyway because Moshe Rabbeinu gave it to everybody else. That's what it means. Originally, only Moshe Rabbeinu was the one that was going to fully delve into the Torah. Okay, interesting structure that Hashem had in mind in this case. But Amr Rabbi Yochanan and Kosh Baruch Hu Mishmash Veshchinas Ela Al Gibor VaAshir VaChacham VaAnaf. There are different Gemaras like this that Hashem reserves His spirit for different types of people. We have obviously the Mishnah and Avos, but how many people are learning together? We had the Gemaras in the beginning of Brachos that talked about people who are davening together. We had the Gemaras, I think it was in Shabbos, about Nevuah. But that was about Ruach HaKodesh specifically. So here's another type of Gemara like that. That you're only going to get this Hashras HaShchina, the presence of Hashem, upon you if you are four things: strong, rich, wise, and humble. Okay, hard to stay humble with those kind of qualities, but let's see. I guess Moshe Rabbeinu, yeah. Mekula and Mimosha.
An easy standard.
Yeah, right. Yeah, the Rambam says we can all be like Moshe Rabbeinu. What that means is up for debate. But Mimosha, Gibor Dechziyev Eifrosh, Etzal Alam Mishkan, literal physically strong because he was able to put this entire rooftop on the Mishkan, these big skins. Moshe Rabbeinu Praso. Moshe Rabbeinu must have done it personally because it's in the single form by Yifrosh. Uchsiv, Esther Amos Orach HaKaresh, and we know that the walls were 10 Amos wide.
They were 10 Amos high, so it would have been difficult to...
Right, the boards were 10 Amos tall.
To spread something on top of it all by yourself.
So says the Gemara, wait a second, Ema de Arach V'katin. Maybe it was tall.
Maybe he was tall. He wasn't that strong, but
he was just tall. Right, who's to say Moshe Rabbeinu had this superpower strength where he threw it over the wall or whatever. Maybe he was just tall and he sort of placed it on. Like Yao Ming dunking. You know, it's okay, not strong, he's just tall.
It seems like the more obvious answer, though,
is that he's strong.
Well, no. Is that even if he was tall, this thing must have been heavy. I mean, think of the size of it.
Yeah, for sure.
The Mishkan.
Yeah.
You have a piece of skin that's big enough to go 10, you know.
Right. And up and over.
Over the whole size.
Yeah, definitely a huge
like
thing.
That's the more obvious answer to prove that he's strong.
Even if he's tall, yeah.
Even if he's tall.
Apparently wasn't strong enough to be called the Gibor. Ela min hadinkra, from a different pasuk. Dechsiv of espos b'shnei haluchos v'ashchem al shtei adai v'ashabrein. Right, Moshe Rabbeinu was carrying these luchos. Haluchos arkan shisha, the length of them was six. V'rachban shisha, and the width of them was six. V'avyan shlosha, and the thickness of them was three. Technically, you put these two pieces together and you have a cube. Right, people like to imagine that the luchos were these tablets like Charleston Heston, or like we have over our Aron Kodeshes.
Right.
But the truth is, they were cubes. It was one big cube. He was holding these two half cubes together, and they were made of legitimate material, as we said before, the minerals of the kind.
So you had to throw it down pretty hard for it to be
right. Well, to carry it and then to break it. There are other midrashim that said that he dropped them and that's why they broke, but that means that he was carrying them beforehand also. So whatever. And the letters were keeping them upright. We know those midrashim. So we know he was strong, and there's no way to understand that otherwise. So he must have been strong. The Ashir, because he had the leftover material from the luchos, so he made a fortune off of that stuff. I don't know how. They always try to guess like how much is the baseball of Alex Rodriguez's 3,000th hit or something like that, right? Or Derek Jeter's 3,000th hit was a home run, so that guy sold it for whatever, $1 million. I don't know. So you can imagine how much he auctioned off the leftover dust of the luchos, you know? It wasn't just that it was, you know, a valuable material. It's like, hey, guys, look what I got, you know? So I can imagine it wasn't just literally the material. But either way, he became rich over it. Chacham, he was wise. There were 50 levels of understanding that was given to the world. And Moshe Rabbeinu got all of them except for one. Ma'at was that last level of understanding you couldn't get.
I guess that must have been the one that Shlomo Melch got, because we say he was the wisest.
The chukim. It was all of that.
Right, we say Shlomo Melch was the wisest person that ever lived. So
right.
Moshe Rabbeinu must have been the level below him.
Right. My point is that maybe there's a machlokas about whether or not Shlomo knew the reasons for the chukim. You know, you ever heard that?
Yes.
Shlomo Melch knew. I don't remember. There is a discussion in association with that concept. I don't know if it meant even he didn't know it or only he knew it. I don't remember which one it was. Either way, Anav is probably the easiest because it says it in the pasuk. Tiv ha'ish Moshe Anav Ma'od. Can't argue with that one. He's humble. Amar Rav Yochanan, Kol Neviim Ashirim Hayu. All of the Neviim were rich. If you were saying that Hashras Hashchina is dependent on it, so then presumably that's the case. Four of them were prophets, and we know that they were rich. Moshe dichtiv lo chamor echad mehem nasasi. Why did we quote the pasuk from before? No?
Yeah.
I don't know. Either way, he says to Korah, he didn't take anything from them, even one donkey. He didn't need to. Iblo agra, if Moshe Rabbeinu is saying that
I didn't take it without paying for it.
Did you take it without paying? La fuke man de shaka below agra. Is he trying to say, look, I didn't steal? What kind of chiddush is that? Ela da fila ba agra, meaning he was able to pay for it.
Or meaning he didn't even.
He didn't even have to pay
because he had his own.
So Gemara says, "Dilma mishum de anihava." Maybe it's because he was poor. That's why he didn't take it. Ela psalachab sultan leishacha. Okay, I don't know why I didn't start there, but okay, same thing as before. That he had the extras from the little Shmuel Dichtiv, Hini Anu Bi Negan Hashem and Negan Mishicho, as Shor Milakhti Vachamor Milakhti. That Shmuel was also praised for not taking from the Jewish people any of their animals. Ibachinam Lafukimad Shak Vachinam, Al Dafil Basakhar. So Dilmadani Haba, maybe he was poor. Same thing as Moshe Rabbeinu. Elamehacha, Usishuvaso Haramasa, Kisham Beso. He would go up to the Ramah, the heightened place. That's where he lived. Amar Rava, Kol Makom Shehalach Beiso Imo. Anywhere he went, his house was with him. I guess he had a lot of stuff with him. The point is that he had a lot of stuff. Okay. Amar Rava, Gadol.
So you can't say he was so poor that he didn't need animals to schlep his stuff.
Oh, so that's a combination. From the fact that he had all this stuff means that he had what to buy things with, and he didn't have to either way. Okay, Amar Rav Gadol Mashenema B'Shmuel Yoster Mishenema Moshe. Greater is that which says by Shmuel that he was rich than Moshe Rabbeinu. The Ilu Moshe Rabbeinu Ksiv Lochamor Echad I may have Nasasi Da Afilu B'Sachar, even paying for it Vil Gav Shmuel Afilu B'Ratzon Lo Scharav Dichsiv Ayomru Lo Ashak Tanu V'Lo Ratzosanu. Even if they wanted to sell things to him, he wouldn't take them. Moshe Rabbeinu would have had to initiate it himself. But they actually offered him and he wouldn't take it. Something like that. Okay. Amos does the Vayan Amos by Yomar El Amasya. Lo Navi Anochi, Velo Ben Navi Anochi, Voker Anochi, Uvolim Shikmim. Bolis Shikmim. Kidim Sargim Rav Yosef. Are Mare Gese Ana. I am a man of many flocks and cattle. Vishikmin Libish Felta. I also have the sycamore trees.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He's got a lot of stuff. Yonah Dechsev Aitem Schara Vayered Ba. And he gave his money and went onto the boat, I assume this is. Vem Rav Yochanan Shenasan Schara Shal Hasfina Kula. He paid for the entire cruise, the whole boat. Amarava Romanus Schara Shal Sfina Havia Arbas Alafim Dinare Dava. The payment for that boat was 4,000 dinar. Must have been that Yonah was rich. He would be able to pay such a thing. Originally, Moshe Rabbeinu had learned the Torah and then forgot it. You might look at that pasuk and say, what in the world is that talking about? What, how does that pasuk says it was given to Moshe? How does that imply that Moshe Rabbeinu forgot it? So first of all, you have the word Vayitena Moshe. But if I'm not mistaken, Rashi says on that pasuk, it was given to Moshe when he finished speaking to him, when Hashem finished speaking to him, that the word kichaloso is written without a vav. And therefore it's meant to give over the impression that he was like a kala, or the Torah was like a kala, and it was just given over to him in one fell swoop, like one big marriage. It wasn't like he had to, you know, learn it little by little, but just like a kala to the chuppah, she's given over in her entirety. Something like that. And I'm pretty sure Rashi said that on the pasuk. Either way, new Mishnah. Some interesting stuff there. Vizan es ishto v'yes banav. A person who has a neder against him is allowed to nonetheless provide for the bare necessities of his wife and children. The wife and children have a neder that he's not allowed to give them anything. They're not allowed to benefit from the father. Nonetheless, he has a responsibility to give to them. Af al pi shehu chayv mizonosan. Oh, it's the other way around. Hold on. Okay. I think what it's saying is that the man is not allowed to benefit from the children, and now he's fulfilling a mitzvah by giving them their sustenance. Is that what it's saying? Yeah, something like that. That the husband, the father slash husband, is aser bahana from his children or wife, but nonetheless, when he gives them things, that's not a violation in the fact that he is fulfilling something. He's fulfilling his responsibility. He's fulfilling a mitzvah. Therefore, that does give him a certain sense of benefit, of pleasure or benefit for having completed that, fulfilling that. Nonetheless, it's okay because that's a responsibility that he has, something like that. Anyone have something else to understand wrong?
It seems to say here that, you know, I have said that I'm not going to benefit from you, but you could still feed my wife and children. Even though that's my obligation to feed my wife and children, you, who I'm not allowed to benefit from you, you are allowed to.
Oh, okay. So now we're talking about two adult men. One says, you can't benefit from me. And nonetheless, if that person were to go give to the other one's children, it would still be okay. It would not be considered the other person's hana, even though he's giving him a break. That's what you're saying.
And he describes the benefit in here as incidental.
Right, meaning he has a... He's fulfilling something good, and then the you're right, there's like...
Well, isn't this similar to the discussion we had a couple of daf ago about whether or not if there's a neder that I can't benefit from you, you can still give my truma, still give truma on my behalf?
Well, there's a whole machlokes for what that was referring to, but yes.
Right.
Technically, the mitzvah itself is not considered hana.
So since the man
I'm
has an obligation to support his wife...
Right, but he's not the one doing that mitzvah.
So therefore, if the other guy does it, I don't have to do it. If somebody else is supporting
right,
him,
so it's incidental, right. So I think so what Aaron's pointing out is that it's incidental in the fact that he no longer has to do something.
Right.
But it's not incidental in the fact, it's not hana in the fact that he gets, you know, immediate pleasure from it.
And then he points out in the note that it's talking, the ear, he says it must be talking about very small children, because older children...
Right, you wouldn't have to, yeah. But you're not allowed to benefit his animals, bein tmeah, bein tahora, regardless of whether or not they are edible, I assume this means, kosher animals. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, zanas hatemea, v'eno zanas hatahora. Because the tahora one is, it stands to be eaten later on, so your feeding of it would be beneficial to the other person.
It's about to say.
Okay.
No, the Mishnah says.
The Mishnah says, Amru lo, the Chacham say, Ma bein tmeah le tahora, Amru lehu, ha tahora nafsha la shamayim v'gufa shalo. It's tmeah nafsha v'gufa la shamayim. And therefore... you can feed either one of them. Oh, Rabbi Eliezer says back, there is a difference. Okay, hold on, let me go through this again. So it says you're not allowed to only, well, Rabbi Eliezer said you can only do the Tameyim because you're not going to benefit from them. So the Chachamim say, what's the difference? So he responds that Tahora, which is ultimately going to be shechted for the sake of a mitzvah, I guess, for Hashem, then thereby it becomes edible. But a tzimea is all for...
Well, the owner can eat, and so therefore he'll have benefit from it being fed, because...
Right, that's what we said before. I don't know what the nashul shamayim thing is, but... the other one, the Tamea, is entirely unusable. I don't know why it doesn't just say it like that. Okay. Amrulo, afa Tamea, nafshu shamayim v'gufa shalo. Even the physical animal who's not kosher can be used. She'im yirtzeh harehu mochra lo v'dik l'klavim. O ma'achilo l'klavim. You could use that for other things, like selling it. You can sell the hide. You can sell the whatever, you know. And then obviously you can sell the meat itself. And then you can also give the meat to your other animals that can live by itself.
The obvious thing missing is you can work that animal. If it's a donkey or
that's
a horse,
true.
You work it. That's the
right,
obvious
right.
thing. That's,
well, yeah. I think it's interesting. I think maybe the point is that the literal feeding doesn't translate into work necessarily.
Well, he says
the meat is what is most benefiting from the feeding.
But he says an animal must certainly be fed to sustain its life so it can do its work. Where the owner is unable to feed the animal at all, Rabbi Eliezer would agree that the vower may not feed the animal for the owner. Because the animal's basic maintenance would surely constitute a prohibited benefit gained by the owner. Rabbi Eliezer is speaking of a case where the unclean animal is adequately fed by the owner and the vower wishes to just fatten up the animal.
Right. So if we're just fattening it up, so then what is the added benefit? Is there added benefit? So yes, if it's fatter, there's more meat to eat, to be eaten.
And even though the owner can't eat it, but he can feed it to his dogs.
Right. But the point is that the animal's already working, so feeding it more is not going to help it work better.
It might make it worse.
Could make it worse, yeah, because then now he's fat. It's a fat, lazy pig, whatever it is. Amar Rav Yitzchak Bar Chanani, Amar Rav Huna, Hamuder Hana Mechaber Mutzul Hasi Lo Bito. There's an interesting one. I know I made this neder and we're not supposed to marry, but do you want our kids to marry each other? That would be an interesting one. Talk about in-laws that don't get along. But that's what it says. You can still marry off your daughter to the person. Have a Rabbi Zer B'mayaskin. What we're talking about? If we're talking about the father of the kala, can't pay for anything of the chasan. So Moser Hare Moser Lo Shivcha L'Sham Sho. He's basically just giving over his daughter as a maidservant. Is that what it's saying? Ella benifse chasan asur al avi hakala. But it's the son-in-law that he's making a neder that he can't benefit from his wife's father. Gidolim yizu amru. Zanas ishtov yasbanav afal
pish. So he points out, so now the wife's father's benefit, that now he no longer has to take care of his, support his daughter, because now that's the husband's job.
Mm-hmm.
That's not considered a benefit. It's kind of one of those incidental benefits.
Oh, he's saying like the husband is going to take care of his daughter. So like, yeah, I guess technically he is benefiting from that, the fact that he doesn't have to support her anymore. Okay.
I guess this was in the days before the wife's family paid for the wedding.
Oh, yes. Before the liquid rules. Gedolim yizu amru. Zanas ishtov yazbanav yafal pisha hu chayv mizonosan. Greater than that, this says in our Mishnah, you can pay the person can actually support the children and the wife, even though he is obligated in the payments, he'd be benefiting from them by not having to do them.
So you have to tell me that? What's
the chiddush? You're right, that the husband can take care of her. That's always the case. Olam, shenichse avi kala asur na al-chasen. Really, it is the case that it's the father-in-law cannot give any benefit to the chasen. Uvevito bogeres umidata. And when it's the daughter who's older and she did it on her own. Yeah, so therefore the father is not really giving her over at all. Right? So we have a price that corroborates that claim. Amar Rabbi Yaakov, Hamadr Benol Talmud Torah. Someone who says, makes a neder, that his child will be for learning and not to do any work. So he's allowed to, so the son is allowed to still do things for kibud avim, like simple tasks, like filling up water and lighting the fire. Those aren't really, that's not what the father meant when he said you shouldn't work. Rabbi Yitzchak Amar Litzlos Lo Gadda Katan, he could even roast a small fish. Because it's not going to, interesting, it's not going to distract him from his learning that much. What does that mean? Okay, maybe it's like a sudas havra after a person comes back. You give them some something to drink because the person's not supposed to do it themselves. You give him, I guess, rehydrating water after he comes out of the shvitz. Because you need to drink after that. Make up for the water that you sweat out of your body. He said, he can even support the slaves and maidservants, non-Jews, who are in his house. So this verse says you can't do anything like the Chacham and Rishon says in my time. Avada v'shivchosav aknanam l'mana charusa avidan. They are l'mana charusa. They're like dead animals that you can't eat.
That's true. They seem to be torn apart.
That's a weird way to say it. basically, he's not going to get any physical, tangible benefit from their bodies. So to support them and give them extra food is not a problem. However, behema lipituma avida, an animal is destined to be fattened up so that he could eat from the meat. And therefore, there's a difference between the two. Even though they're both owned property in that sense, there's still not a tangible benefit from feeding the workers like the animals. Hamodrana, says Mishnah, Hamodrana, Hamudar Hana Mechaver Venichus Tavakro, someone who is, there's a nether against them that they shouldn't get any benefit. That the other person should get benefit from them, and then that person comes to visit them. So then Omed Aval Lo Yoshev, he can stand there when he visits, but he can't sit down. Because he wants to do the mitzvah, so he shouldn't do it more than is necessary. Umirapo, let's say it's a doctor, Rifuas Nefesh Valo Rifuas Mama. He can heal him in terms of his body and whatever he's sick from, but he cannot repay him or something like that. He can't heal his possessions, like his animals or something like that.
It's just the Gemara that's going to explain.
All right. On Mem Aleph, we'll get there in a few days. All right, Shkaya, we'll pick up tomorrow afternoon.